Welcome to another episode of the podcast Strength Training for Runners by me, Tim Edderton, and I am delighted to say I have my second guest on the podcast today. And today's guest is a personal trainer from Cheshire, James Griffiths. His company is called James Griffiths Personal Training. And he's also a former athlete, a very high caliber athlete. He was a former English Schools 800 meter finalist, finishing in fifth place in the English Schools 800 meters. And also at junior level, he was an England Athletics indoor silver medalist over 1500 meters. He has a 800 meter PB of 1:52. So welcome James Griffiths to the podcast. How are you doing?
Yeah, very well, thank you, and thank you for having me.
No worries at all. So yeah, just gave you a little introduction there. So you were, I guess you were, you know, a really successful junior athlete, and you're based not too far from where I was originally based, actually, in Cheshire. So you're based out of the Vale Royal Club as a junior, which has a super strong tradition of producing high caliber middle distance runners. I think, you know, going back to sort of my kind of generation, I remember the likes of Tom Carter, Alex Carter, being massive athletes on the kind of the local and national scene back then. And then since then, there's been the likes of, I guess, Steve Mitchell's been operating. I know he's moved away to Bristol and stuff in recent years, but he was originally based out of Vale Royal, and there's been all sorts of other athletes on the middle distance scene in between those times that have come out of Vale Royal. So obviously you were one of those athletes. So what was it like sort of starting your career at Vale Royal? What was the training setup like? What kind of stuff were you doing? Who were you coached by there? Let's start off by having a little bit of an insight into that first part of your career, if you like.
Yeah, a little trip down memory lane. Yeah, so I actually started off in sprints.
Okay.
Like all kids in school, you actually have some, as it probably turned out, delusions that you're going to be a sprinter. I started off doing 100s, which I think long term, the technical aspect and the running mechanics side of things is probably useful for a lot of long and middle distance runners to start with. You learn more efficient running mechanics. So I think maybe long term it did actually benefit me. Within sort of, I'd always sort of done a bit of 800s, you know, on the side as well. But I think I pretty quickly realised that I was pretty quick for over the sprints, but I was never really going to trouble the fastest in the UK. So started to take 800 metres a lot more seriously. Trained by Andy Carter, who's Tom and Alex's dad, 1972 Olympic finalists and former British record holder over the 800. So, you know, fair calibre of knowledge and coach to sort of help on that sort of journey. And so, yeah, a lot of it was track-based work, but I think we didn't have a traditional synthetic track. We used it's like a gravel track, like sort of shale track, which, you know, had its pros and cons. The winter months when it chucked it down and froze over wasn't particularly fun, but potentially led to fewer sort of calf issues because you don't have that recoil back through the track. And, you know, whenever you did come to a meet, you kind of felt like you had an extra second of lap in your legs because you were, for once, the track was giving you something back. In terms of the training, you know, initially it was, a lot of 200-based stuff, really. It was sort of, you know, it could be 16 by 200, it could be 5 by 200. You know, there were other staple sessions in there, 1Ks, but there would probably be, especially in the summer months, sets of 200s in sort of various different sort of guises, which probably led to the group, you know, there were some serious kickers in that group. There was a lot of people with some serious pace. And through the winter months, you had, you know, the traditional long runs, fartleks, hill training, circuits. Personally, training-wise, I was quite a low-volume athlete. I wasn't a big mile monster. I always preferred shorter, quicker things, and that was how a lot of my training was based. Moving forward, that possibly might have been to my detriment, as my aerobic side possibly wasn't as strong as it could and should have been for the 800. I just kind of ran it off speed-based training. But you know, as the years have gone by, you know, if you look at some of the results that Burwell had, now that the club has massively outperformed its catchment area. Like, we don't have a university nearby to call in of university students. We don't have major cities within about 30 miles of us. And for a club that's in, you know, just rural Cheshire, it really does outperform some of the big city clubs when you consider the geographical location and the catchment area. Like, there's yearly, there's national medalists on a team and an individual basis, numerous English schools finalists, and you know, some very, very serious BBs being sort of thrown around by a lot of the athletes. So I think the group at the minute has, you know, the training's evolved quite a lot. There's a lot more variety in there, and you can really see it's reaping the rewards. So, you know, for a club in such a small area, the setup is phenomenal. It really is.
Yeah, definitely agree with that. So, I mean, like I said, when I kind of did the introduction, you know, for me, my first memories of sort of Vale Royal as a club were mainly, I guess, Alex Carter and Tom Carter, as I said, being the main two athletes. And I guess possibly that was the point at which maybe Andy Carter started coaching the group there. Yeah. I'm not too sure. Maybe he took an interest because of his children, Tom and Alex. And then from there, it's escalated into what it is now. It really is a bit of a powerhouse in middle distance running, really. You know, and like you say, it's all, you know, is it Winsford Vale Royals based out of?
Winsford.
I remember doing the odd Cheshire Championships cross country race there, and you know, sit and you know, we go through part of that cinders or shale track that you talked about there. So yeah, you know, no major facilities there, not near any big city, like you say. You know, it's not that close to Manchester or any universities, but yeah, super, super successful. So, and I guess, you know, talking about like the sessions you were saying, like doing 200 meter, a lot of 200 meter repetitions, and maybe, I guess you're saying possibly later on in your career that was to your detriment, possibly, but all, at the same time, it's playing to your strengths. If you were a more of a speed based athlete, then it's always good to play to your strengths as well, I would argue.
Yeah,
so super, super interesting insight there to, I guess, the Vale Royal setup. But of course, after Vale Royal, you moved on to Loughborough University, which again is also like famous university for high performance sport and athletics in particular. So what was the type of training you did at Loughborough kind of the same as what you were doing at Vale Royal, or was there a significant change in what your training setup was like when you moved away from your setup at Vale Royal and moved to the university setting at Loughborough?
You know, there's always crossovers for sure, you know, because, you know, you pick a certain event, there are certain fundamentals that you will see wherever you are in the country. But I think what you benefit is the facilities are no longer a problem. I mean, you've got the indoor facilities, you've got the strength and conditioning, you've got the power base, you've got obviously the track, you've got the trails, and that coupled with the fact that you now are surrounded by very, very, very good athletes. Like in our group, you had people like, you know, Ricky Seuss, Lisa Dabrisky, Kevin Dayton, Adam Hickey. You know, all of a sudden you went from comfortably leading sessions and having to take them all out to middle of the pack. I always find you rise to what's around you.
Mm-hmm.
And I always remember that I got to a point where I was almost surprised myself with some of my training performances, because you just were able to get so much more from yourself because you were surrounded by some of the best athletes in the country 5-6 times a week. And in terms of the actual training, the training volume obviously went up as you get older. You can start to handle a little bit more. I started to do a few more miles, and you know, there was a lot more emphasis on aerobic capacity development, and you know, there was still some seriously quick sessions in there. You know, 5 200s and sort of 23 24s were still happening. But again, there was a much higher emphasis on aerobic development, higher aerobic capacity, and the introduction of strength and conditioning work, a lot more core stability. I'd never really done any free weight conditioning beforehand. And year on year, I felt myself, I was getting stronger. Some of my cross-country performances were getting a lot better. And, you know, I did a lot more. I never really ran too many 1500s, which is why, in comparison to my 1500 PB, it doesn't seem to add up towards the 800, but I simply didn't run it that often. But, I got myself to sort of sub 4, and that speed endurance and that sort of aerobic strength enabled the 800 PB to come down as my weaknesses were becoming stronger. In my final year, I was probably having the best cross-country season of my life. I knew aerobically I was probably as strong as I'd ever been. And I was, you know, you start in your head, you start thinking forward and think, oh, we might be able to, this might be the year we go under 150, which I know sounds easy to say, but I truly believe that I was going to be very, very close that summer of 2010. But unfortunately, injury sort of stripped away the opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, that was something I was going to actually touch on next, in actual fact. So you've just kind of mentioned your injuries there a little bit. And I know you've talked a little bit about injury problems in the past on social media and stuff. So, and you know, it's no secret that middle distance running and training for high performance middle distance is highly demanding on the body. And, you know, a lot of, I guess at that kind of age, the university age, you know, a lot of massively talented athletes do, I guess, fall by the wayside a little bit. You know, they struggle to make that transition from massively talented junior, massively successful junior to being an established senior. So would you classify yourself amongst that? Because, you know, you were, you know, at one stage as a junior, you were one of the best juniors nationally. You know, you made national finals, national medals. But I think, you know, your PB was, I guess, not set that long after moving out of the junior ranks. And then, yeah, do you think there was more to give if it hadn't have been for injuries?
Yeah, I do. Because my PB was bottom year under 23. And yeah, I think even that season, I feel I was probably in about 151 shape. And there was a last race of the season was at Stratford. And I was in the B race, and I was really sort of pushing to sort of try and get in the A race because I knew I was in shape to probably go. It might have been a lower 152, or it might have even been a 151. And I knew I was in great shape, and yeah, I ended up winning the B race in, I think, 153.6. But I won it by just under 3/4 of a second, just with a kick in the home straight, and I thought that might have been a bit of a missed opportunity. But you know, potential wise, maybe the ceiling might have been 148, 149.
Yeah.
Again, I'm just speculating. I can't.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's always
realistically, I would probably have been a decent 800 meter runner. Certainly not elite level. I have to face facts and just say maybe that sort of sub elite, seriously good club runner was possibly my level. But you know, it's at any level, you know, this probably goes for anyone who starts out running park run or all the way up to the elite. Running fast is a joy. It's a great experience, and when you get those days where it all clicks into place and you run a PB, it doesn't matter what level you're doing that to. Like it's still kind of what gets you through the sessions and makes you put the work in.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I would say, you know, I mean, from my own experience of competing and racing, you know, so I've finished some races in an absolute state where I've, you know, been, you know, put everything on the line and, you know, been in an absolute state afterwards. But at the same time, sometimes when you're just in like fantastic shape and like some of the fastest races I've ran, like in fact, my 800 meter PB in particular stands out. I remember finishing that race and like, I don't think I could have gone any faster. I think I got the most out of myself on the day, but I finished the race and I was like, I'm not in any pain at all. I was just like floating around the track and, you know, it was just you're on a kind of on another level that day. You just, everything just seems to just float along effortlessly and it's just a fantastic feeling when it clicks like that, most definitely. Yeah.
You always think, like, you try and think back about the days that felt like that.
Yeah.
You can almost count them on one hand, because when you do, like, especially 800, it doesn't matter, you know, you can run a PB 9 times out of 10, it's hell at some point.
Yeah.
And I always think this is with a lot of athletes as well. They believe that as they get fitter, faster, running quicker, that they'll get to a point where it no longer hurts. It's like, oh no, it'll hurt just as much, you just return faster times.
Yeah.
It never, especially with like middle distance running, like I say, you can almost guarantee it, you're going to come to the home straight and you're almost going to be numb with lactic acid and it always hurts. But, you know, like you said, you do get those once in a blue moon days where you just feel like you're running on air and it just doesn't hurt and it just feels effortlessly fast. But, yeah, like I
said,
I can probably count those races on one hand.
Yeah, most certainly. Yeah, for me as well. For me as well, without a doubt, you know. But, yeah, let's... So just touching, I guess, on a few things you've said relating to the injuries and what you were talking about at Loughborough, you know, there was an increase in the strength and conditioning work when you went to Loughborough, but would you have put more of that in your training or less of it? You know, is there anything maybe you'd have done differently to try and stave off injuries a bit more, or do you think it was what it was? You were, you know, that's the question, I guess. Would you have done anything differently?
Yeah, I think maybe looking back on things, probably more regular massage and a higher focus on recovery. Part of my problem is that I run very, very high on the front of my foot, right up on my toes. Whether that's a 200 meter rep or it's a 10 mile run, that puts a crazy demand on the sort of lateral stability of the ankle. So your tibialis posterior, just on the inside of your shin, and you know your general calf muscles. And I think I would have invested a lot more time conditioning those areas, working on general ankle flexibility and stability, and probably more so investing a lot more in regular massage. I think we all can't be guilty in any form of training. This doesn't just have to be middle distance running. It could be freeway training. It could be swimming, cycling. We all, and you know, maybe social media is to blame, but we all live in this, be the hardest worker in the room and be seen to be the hardest worker in the room. And here's my Strava segments. Look how ridiculously fast I'd run my Sunday runs, and it's a lot of measuring against other people on social media. And I think what gets lost in that is the adaptations and the improvements come from the recovery of training, not just the stimulus of training. Especially when you are in the middle and long distance, you know, you end up with probably cross country through the winter, road races spring and autumn, a track in the middle. It can, if you want it to be a complete 52 week a year competition, you can't afford to just endlessly break your body down with increasingly hard workouts. You do need to make sure easy days are easy and improve like recoverability from what you're actually doing. Possibly as you start to see, or as I started to see, the potential to run faster, I've possibly got drawn into that trap of trying to train harder and harder and harder without adequate recovery in terms of mobility work, massage, strength and conditioning. As I say, hindsight's a wonderful thing, but I think probably what I learned the hard way was you've got to take care of the overall structure of your body so you can actually perform and not break down and always be away from racing.
Yeah, most definitely. And I just, yeah, touch on the like the 52 weeks of the year kind of thing you were saying there. And I think there's another aspect to this. As club runners in the UK, you know, we're lucky to have such a well-structured club system in the UK, but it can also have its downsides, I would say, in the pressure that can be applied to athletes from the clubs to always turn out from the club. Like you say, the track season can roll into the road relay season, which can roll into the cross country season, which can roll into the spring road relay season, and then straight back into the track season. And depending on the club you're at, there can be a lot of pressure to, you know, turn out for all the British League matches, then do the six-stage road relays, at northern level, at national level, the cross country relays, and then the 12-stage relays, etc., etc., etc. And I think you, as athletes, you need to be strict and stern enough, I suppose, to say, look, no, I need to take some downtime at some point.
Yeah, and I think it's like I do understand where clubs necessarily come from. Like they want their best athletes competing, so you know they can stay in the Premier League of the British League, and it's sometimes just please turn up and stand on your feet to score some points. But this selfish athlete side, you think, well, I'm tired, and you just think I need to take care of myself and not just rock up and have to do the steeplechase or something so we can get 8 points or whatever it might be. But yeah, definitely learning to recover is something that I've now grown to appreciate. And you know, when you're younger, you just go out and run. Mm. You know, when you're in your teens, you can almost get away with anything, because your body will just spring straight back. And you know, now obviously knowing what I know about strength and conditioning, and you just think if you just spent those younger years doing the core stability, doing the glute conditioning, getting to a real good habit of mobility work, regular massage, then do you add probably more years that you can compete at a very high level and keep yourself going 40s, 50s, 60s, you know, until it's still running at a good level. Because I think the hardest part, I think, is as you get injured and, you know, maybe you lose competitiveness in terms of overall fitness, your mind never stops believing that you're always that PB athlete.
Mm.
Whereas maybe the body isn't in that condition. Like I don't think you ever lose that competitiveness and that belief that you're always a 150 something 800 meter runner, or you're always going to be a 15 minute 5K runner. But I think as you get older, you have to, you know, there's almost like a massively exponentially increasing need to do everything around just running: recovery, nutrition, sleep, strength and conditioning, mobility. You have to invest even more of that, just to kind of keep yourself in one piece to be able to go session to session, let alone race at an incredibly high level.
Most certainly. And just touching on the psychological aspect you talked about there, and I think, you know, that's massive as well, because I think it's once athletes start to, I guess, get in a pattern of being injured, coming back from injury, you know, it's in a rush to get back to where they were. And then, you know, they get back on the track, they're trying to hit times that they were hitting before, but they're not capable of, and the body's not ready for it. And it just feeds more and more into that pattern of trying to do stuff that you're not ready for, therefore you get injured again. And then, but the spiral gets bigger because you lose even more of that conditioning, and therefore you're trying to bridge a bigger gap each time. You just have to... I think some athletes just need to recognise what is happening and take a much longer term approach sometimes when they are coming back from injury, and just recognise it's, you know, you can take your time sometimes. You know, now's not the time to be rushing back to full fitness. You know, spend a bit more time on other aspects, such as everything you've talked about, the massage, the strength and conditioning exercises, and all the rest of it.
Yeah. From the psychological side as well. Is I don't think people really appreciate the mentality and the challenge that comes with periods of injury, because you all go through that, right, there's a little bit of pain there, and we've all done it, we all just try and crack on, like, it will just run through it, and, you know, then starts to come this sort of panic phase of, right, this isn't actually just a bit of tightness, this might actually be a bit of a problem, you know, that you need to come to that sort of acceptance that there is a problem, and what you do about it, and difficulty being in, especially in high level sort of runners in this instance, is it challenges your physical identity. Like, you were always known as this athlete who can run these times, and when that starts to slip away, there does become like a degree of, who am I? Like, if I can't compete at this level, then can I call myself a runner anymore? Like, how do I now define myself beyond this runner that I'm struggling to fill, because I can't string more than a month of training together without breaking down again. Each cycle of this means I get a little bit more deconditioned and a little bit less fit, and the speed starts to go away, and it can cause quite sort of a downward turn in mood and emotion as you start to lose in your own mind that ability to identify as an athlete.
Yeah, most certainly. And that's definitely something I experienced myself, yes, as a teenager, you know, we're going back a long time now, but I remember, like, back in, I think, 1998, when I was an under 15, you know, I was on paper, I was the fastest under 15 in Britain, over 1500 metres, and then I started, at the end of that summer, I really struggled with various injuries and got into the kind of cyclic spiral pattern of injured, not injured that we were talking about. And I remember going from, with, by the end of that winter, I went to the English Schools Cross Country Championships and finished in 232nd position. Or I think it was 230, it was like way down. There weren't very many people behind me, that's for sure. And just like my mental state at that point was just like so poor. You know, I was in a very bad place to have, you know, just 6 months earlier, I've been operating at one level, and then 6 months down the line to be just apparently a completely different athlete, just not even remotely operating near that level anymore. It was difficult to deal with, for sure.
Difficult age group as well, because, you know, you start to hit coming out of sort of top year under 15 through sort of under 17. Obviously, for most people, it's peak growth. And you know plenty of athletes that maybe like under 13 were just destroying everyone, and now they grow about 6 inches, and it's, you know, the actual physical fatigue that comes with that, the performance nosedives, because it can't perform at that level whilst you're trying to deal with like such amazing sort of growth. And it's, you know, some people sort of, it lets it sort of be the end of them, and then other people stick it out, and then as they come into sort of under 20, everything clicks back into place. Like, the talent went nowhere. It's just,
yeah,
your body was dealing with a lot while it was growing.
Yeah, for sure. So I mean, this is, we could talk forever about this kind of stuff. It's been super, yeah, super interesting, super enlightening. But I'll just, I think I'll try and move things on a little bit more back to the present day now. So I think it's fair to say we'd probably both class ourselves as retired athletes now. Without speak, I certainly would. Would you class yourself as a retired athlete now? Or?
I still like to sort of compete at sort of local, like the Cristleton. I'm quite lucky that Cristleton 5K is quite a local one for me.
Yeah.
The Mid-Cheshire 5K. So I do still like to race and do a bit of cross country. And, you know, you always live in hope that you can sort of get to a level where you're more content. I think certainly the days of flying around in low 150, 800s, I might have to admit, have left me behind. But you still always enjoy running. You know, it's...
Absolutely, yeah.
It gives you so much. You know, you know friends up and down the country. You know, obviously the physical health, and You know, if you're lucky enough to have competed at a good level and had some success, there's always you know, very fond memories of, and so, and as you move through life, you know, it, running now serves as much a purpose as just a nice way to kind of relax as it did to compete at any level. So, yeah, I would sort of bob into the odd race here and there, but maybe the super competitive days, I might go with semi-retired then, not
yeah,
fully retired.
That's fair, that's fair. Yeah, and I've also, but you're doing a lot more, probably a lot more weight training these days as well. I think it'd be fair to say, looking from your social media, you know, you've put on a bit of muscle mass. I think you're looking good these days from what you've put up.
Yeah, and I think it's trying to find that enjoyment, and you know, maybe that's where removing the pressure of having to be this athlete, this 800 meter runner, and just going, I just fancy going for a bit of a run today. Yeah. Like, you know, I'll run at this pace, or, you know, I might go faster, or I might do some intervals, or I might hit some weights. Like, just adds a bit of variety and enjoyment to training and, you know, maintaining strength and aerobic fitness and posture and, yeah, just a slightly less pressured environment.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so, I mean, for me, since retiring from the competitive side of athletics, I've got into my weights a lot. It's probably mostly what I like to do these days, but I'd probably consider myself like a fair weather runner. Like when the weather gets nice in the summer, I'm like, oh yeah, I'll go out and put my running shoes on and get a few miles done then. I'm less keen in the winter months these days. but yeah, it's good to keep in touch with it, of course, and for all the reasons you've just said. I'd like to, you know, just chat a bit about your business as well. So it's called James Griffiths Personal Training. That's the name of your business, isn't it? Yeah, and we were just chatting a little bit before we went on air as well. Obviously you are based in Cheshire, but you're very much for going online with your client base now. Were you saying you're pretty much entirely based online now?
Yeah, as I say, obviously what's happened over the past few months has kind of forced the entire industry that way, but it kind of, in a way, kind of accelerated that process through necessity. And, you know, it's been nice to see that. My belief was that it, you know, online personal training can work very well, and it's nice to see that, because I've been sort of forced into that position, that if anything, things have actually, I've found that results are improving.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of one-to-one sessions, because obviously they were completely off the cards, I've been doing coaching calls with a lot of clients, and you actually get to know and understand your clients like so much better. What are their challenges to a great degree? Instead of having a quick nutrition chat in a 2-minute rest between a set of deadlifts, we've got 30, 40, 50 minutes to sit on the phone and really get into what challenges they're facing and what can we do to overcome these barriers to sort of maximize results whilst not removing every shred of enjoyment from people's lives. It gives you time to sort of get into the program and make tweaks to it, and It's become a really, really effective way of maximizing people's programming and nutrition on a very individual basis, because we've had the time to have those conversations. So, it's been really refreshing to see just how well it can work.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. So let's, like, hypothetically speaking, is it fair to say you focus a lot on sort of fat loss results with a lot of your clients?
I'd say 80-90% or more, fat loss, body transformation type clients, and possibly the other 10% know my background in running and they want to improve their running performance as well. But
okay.
on the most part, yes, it will be fat loss, body transformation.
Cool. Clients. Right. Well, I guess given what this podcast is, strength training for runners, then the likely audience here is aspiring athletes, potentially middle distance runners or whatever. So let's roll with that. Given that you do have clients on your books that are athletes, so if let's say I was an aspiring middle distance runner, and I'm looking for some extra help Whether it may be with the strength and conditioning side of things, I don't know. But and I decided to get in touch with you, Strange Griffiths, about online help. How would it look? What walk us through, I guess, what the process would be. Would you jump on a call with the person first and then take it from there? How does online coaching really work for a person just getting started?
Yeah, so the first thing I like to do is book people onto a consultation call, so we can kind of get an idea of where they're at, where they want to be, and possibly what they've, especially in an athlete sense, we're kind of seeing what they've done before, so we understand where there might be gaps in any training or adaptation, or maybe where we might be able to introduce a novel stimulus to sort of take away that sort of staleness of progress. So a lot of people, you know, let's say it was a middle distance athlete and, you know, they were slightly concerned that their speed isn't as it was, but they're like, you know, I do lots of quick reps and, you know, they think that they're doing everything they need to be doing for speed. And, you know, right then you can start going, well, maybe your actual running mechanics aren't the problem. It might be force generation and force application. So we, you know, we start to look at plyometric work, and we start to look at, if they've not done any, we start to look at general free weight exercises so that their overall strength is higher, on top of which we can then start to increase the application of this newfound strength in terms of mechanical force on the floor. You know, we're getting, can we put this, you know, basically can we put the power down? So we start to look at improving like the neuromuscular adaptations and connections so that their actual force application is better. If their mechanics are generally pretty smooth, we're just trying to increase the actual, in this instance, force that they can apply. So it might be some slight upslope sprints. So we have to almost overcome and generate more force, activate a greater degree of the hamstrings, the quads, the glutes, for a more efficient application of power. So, you know, we're always kind of looking for how can we apply a novel stimulus to get more adaptation. Because the good thing is the threshold for improvement, if you start introducing novel stimulus, as long as you do it sensibly, there's a lot more progress left on the table. Whereas if we try and fine-tune maybe their interval training, we have to put so much more consideration and thought trying to squeeze out what might be an extra 1 or 2%, where there might be 5 or 10% left on the table if we can just add some plyometrics in instead.
Definitely. Yeah, no, that sounds awesome. So if there is anyone out there that wants to get in touch with you about that, you know, they like the sound of what you just said, and they want your help with improving their performance, how do they get in touch with you? Do they, Instagram the best place? Have you got a website? Or?
Yeah, we're currently building a website, but Instagram's probably the social media platform I'm most active on, and that is at JamesGriffPT. And like I say, you can just drop me a message and sort of say, you know, this is kind of what I'm looking for, and we can then jump on a call and take things forward from there.
Cool, perfect. And just to clarify, that James Griff, that's the Griff is just GRIFF, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, that's
so GRIFF for the Griff, and then PT at the end. So yeah, do get in touch with James if anyone wants his help with, you know, moving on to the next level, trying to fine tune their performance, stay clear of injuries, all that kind of stuff. You know, if you've made it this far through the interview, then you'll know for yourself. The guy knows what he's talking about. You know, it's been awesome chatting with you, James. So thank you for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Not at all. So it's been brilliant. I think we'll wrap it up there because we have been chatting for quite a long time now, but it's been fantastic. So we'll leave it there for today's episode, and we'll see you next time. But yeah, thanks again, James. It's been wonderful. All right. Okay. See you later, guys.
Take care.
See ya.